I mean, I think that's fine. I mean, I think once we grab our territory and turf, we certainly should hold on to it. But what we have to remember is about the other seats. If you got the first seat, you probably would like to have the second seat. But if you can't have the second seat, make sure the second seat is filled by a man who can talk to that person in the first seat who happens to be a woman. I mean, one of the things that is very difficult, the National Women's Political Caucus, I think, did a tremendous job in terms of recommending a lot of women's groups and recommending women to work in the administration. I think one of the things we did not do is look at the men we were appointing in terms of where they are, where they were on women's issues. That's a little more difficult to do. And let's not all take us for granted that all women are good on women's issues. And just because a woman is a woman, she's going to be very helpful to the women's movement once she gets in. The same thing about a man, as I've seen a number of appointments criticized, where there was a choice between a man and a woman. And let me tell you, I was glad that the man got the job because I happened to know both of the people involved. And then there was a man who was sensitive to women's issues and to civil rights issues and to the type of things that I think he would be interested in. I think that's another thing that we should remember to think about in terms of appointments. I think Jimmy Carter's commitment to women's issues is sincere. Otherwise, I still wouldn't be where I am. And if I ever comes the day that I don't believe that is right, then I won't be where I am. But I still do believe that strongly. I think in terms of the appointments and in terms of the moves he made in different areas, that he's generally committed to the kind of issues that IWI is committed to. And I think that he's going to be very responsive to the report he hears and recommendations from IWI. A year ago, remember, we have a new president, and he's still complying with campaign commitments. And a year ago, it's the women, when he spoke, the only presidential candidate who spoke to the women's agenda, by the way, he said, and I will paraphrase him because I don't have the quote with me, but he said, I want you to be, in addressing the women's group, I want you to be committed, relentless, and militant in your goals. Because this is the country, if we can't do it in our country, who has a constitution and a bill of rights which allows women the freedom that they should have, if we can't do it in our country, we can't do it anywhere. In other words, we should be the leadership. I think that statement makes him particularly responsible for his actions. When he says to you, be militant and committed and relentless, he's talking about be militant and committed and relentless to the federal government. He is now a very major part of that federal government, as are those of us who work for him. And I think it's very important to keep up the kind of all those kinds of things, the support, the suggestions, and the criticism of what we're doing. But I do think that the women do have access, and it should be used responsibly, and I think it has been, and I think it's had a real impact, not only on women's issues, but on all issues which the White House and the federal government has been involved in. There's another White House woman who is here, Betha Brownowitz, who is on the domestic council staff, Stu Eisenstadt, who deals specifically with women's issues and with education. She's also a prime supporter, Judy Lipschutz, Bob Lipschutz's daughter, I see sitting here having me talk about her father. I can't say anything nasty at all. Bob Lipschutz, he's surrounded on all sides with daughters, and with me sitting in the next office to him, he has no choice whatsoever on women's issues. I mean, we drive him crazy at home and in the office, and actually he's been very good to us. As has Stu Eisenstadt, two very good men in the White House who are very good on women's issues. As Judy knows, we've brought Bob along some in recent years, and I think Stuart has been involved in civil rights and women's issues a long time. So you've got some real advocates there, and they should be used. Why don't you ask me what you would like to ask me about whatever? Yeah. We have not at all talked yet about the question was about federal women's programs and federal women's program coordinators. The task force has only so far dealt with federal enforcement of equal employment opportunity and enforcement efforts. And they have not yet dealt with federal women's programs at all. They will move on next to talk about to do housing, and then they will talk about some of the other things you're talking about. But this was kind of the first thing on the agenda, and probably the most difficult, actually, and controversial. Anybody else? Yeah. Thank you. How do you get to the White House? Access to the White House. Yeah, I hear it. Well, I think that there are several key people that you call, depending on what it is. I mean, Beth is one of those people. Mitch Costanza is one of those people. I can be one of those people. And another thing is that in my first 3 months in the White House, we have a directive which says you have to answer all mail, and you have to answer all phone calls. This is openness in government. I mean, it's really... And what I found is that you can call the White House. I mean, I hate to go out on the lecture circuit and say, call the White House, because then everybody does call the White House. I never would have thought of calling. As a woman's lobbyist and a civil rights activist, I never thought of calling the White House. Never entered my mind to call the White House. Never. I would call the EEOC, or I would call the Women's Bureau, but I would never think of calling the White House. Well, let me tell you, IBM calls the White House, and the Business Roundtable calls the White House, and the Chamber of Commerce calls the White House, and women's groups should call the White House. I think what you do is you write a letter, or you call one of us. You should also, and there is a network of women's groups now, the National Women's Political Caucus in Wheel, and Now, and Jewish women's groups, and Hispanic women's groups, who are developing networks themselves. I know the National Women's Political Caucus has really served a coordinating role with women's groups, especially in terms of appointments. And I would suggest if you want to go through that network, you call Jane McMichaels at the National Women's Political Caucus, who's the executive director, and she could at least help you with in terms of when they meet and, you know, I don't know what group you represent or whatever, and get you involved in that kind of access, especially if you're not in Washington or you're a group that does not have an office in Washington. The other thing, we're not like the Chamber of Commerce. We don't have, you know, 100 paid lobbyists for women's groups. So I think it's important when we have common goals to work together for those. So we all die of the heat. Yeah. Okay. Question is about lobbying in ERA. Well, it's two things. One, the anti-lobbying statute applies to the Congress. And ERA is now no longer a congressional decision. The decision's been made by Congress. So the president, if he wants to call an individual state legislature or anybody else, the anti-lobbying statute, which is the only statute that we can find, or that I'm sure anyone else who's looked for it would have told us by now, no one else been able to find any statute, would not apply to ERA. There's some question whether the anti-lobbying statute is constitutional at all in terms of not allowing the president to go to the people and say, call your congressman, which in essence it seems to be what it says. But it would not apply to ERA regardless because it's not a decision which will be made by Congress. It's a decision which will be made by the state. And it's something we can all get involved in. Mm-hmm. If the period is extended, well, if the period is extended, then again it will be the states. The president and all of us can get involved. The anti-lobbying statute in no way prohibits me from calling Senator Benson and saying I think you should do this or such. Nor is it the president calling. Obviously, if I can do it, the president can do it. You can call a congressman 18 times a day if you're in the White House. Doesn't matter. Well, the only thing it prohibits directly is for me to say to you, I think you should call Senator Benson and tell him that whatever. That's literally the only thing that's prohibited. And there's even some question, as I said, raised by the Justice Department, whether or not that's constitutional, and it's being looked into right now. But it's very limited in terms of what you can or cannot do in terms of going to the people or certainly going directly to Congress. The whole idea of it was that you would not use federal funds paper and individuals to send out mass mailings to citizens, enclosing an envelope with a stamp on it saying, send it back to your congressman. That's why the statute was created in the first place. That's the legislative history. It certainly had nothing to do with speaking out or calling people or whatever. Yes. It It's just... There's no question it's been done. There's a long history, obviously, of consulting with the Congress and of going to the people and telling, obviously, you see, the president, you have a right to tell the people who elected you what your programs are and that you'd like their support. Hey, is there any other questions? Or, hey, one other thing that's going on, and it reminds me because Judge Shirley Hofstadler from California is sitting in the audience, one of our prime or best women jurists in the country, certainly, and... We are coming up, which you should know about, and I cannot think of a better issue for women's groups. In Congress, which will probably pass in January or February, is the Omnibus Judgeship Bill. It will create several hundred new federal district judges. Those judges will change the course of history. There will never be a president or a Congress in the history of this country, past, or I would say future, who will have the opportunity to appoint that number of judges. Now, if you're talking about changing history, interpreting laws, and giving human rights to people in this country, you cannot think of anything better. I cannot think of anything better than having good, competent judges. And this is the time when you start talking about who, in wherever you're from in the country, find out how many new federal judges there are going to be, how many new Circuit Court of Appeals judges there are going to be, and start looking, you, women's groups, start looking for good candidates and make sure that those candidates are ready when that judgeship bill passes. Now, we have set up Circuit Court of Appeals merit selection panels. They're set up by the president. And they are interviewing, and will continue to interview for the new judgeships, candidates for the Circuit Court of Appeals. The federal district judges are still within the purview of senators. So those are the people you have to go to talk about it. A number of them have set up merit selection panels themselves to select both judges and U.S. attorneys, and in some case, marshals. But I think it's an issue, again, that now is the time, and in fact, I think IWY is the time that someone should mention this very publicly to this whole session, that this is an issue that women's groups should really be on top of now. Because you know it's coming, and because there can't be anything that will have a broader impact than what we're about to do in those first 6 months in terms of appointing those judges. We will also, as you know, probably have some Supreme Court vacancies during these 4 years, which we want to keep in mind. One of the saddest kinds of things I would have to report in terms of the administration is that of the 11 Circuit Court of Appeals nominees, there are no women that we have appointed, which I think is a terrible record for us, and I'll be the first person to say, because our office is one of the people that are involved in making recommendations to the president, even from the nominating panels. But more work needs to be done by groups, civil rights groups, and women's groups interested in this to go out and find candidates and make sure they get to those nominating panels and make sure that they get to senators and that they get attention. And it should be, I'm not dictating your agenda, but boy, I can't think of anything that would have more of an impact. Yes. I'll repeat the question. Do I ever keep things from the president? My personal life, because he doesn't approve of lots of things. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, the question is, does anyone ever keep anything from the president in terms of the CIA operations, the Helms thing in Chile? The answer is absolutely not. And if you did, and he found out about it, you wouldn't be there more than 2 minutes. Because he insists on knowing everything. And a number of times I thought decisions could be made without him. And not because I wanted to keep something from him, just because I wanted to lessen his workload. And I assure you that man knows more about what's going on in this government in terms of decisions, not only the intelligence community, everything. He reads volumes of material. Nobody can keep up with him. And he wants to know everything that's going on, and he insists on knowing everything that's going on. He meets with Stan Turner once or twice a week just to hear about the CIA activities. I mean, he really has a grasp and really does make the decisions, and you do not keep things from him. It's really amazing, actually. The question was, is it true that they're going to get the White House gossip now? Is it true that Hamilton is going to go to the DNC and Bob Strauss is going to become the chief of staff? I cannot imagine that Hamilton is going to go to the DNC. It would be unlikely that the man who is one of the prime senior people in the White House is going to move from there to go to the DNC. Well, we're talking about 1980. And I would think it's all in all likelihood Hamilton will head up the reelection campaign, yes. But what Bob Strauss's role will be from now until then, I don't think anybody knows, including Bob Strauss. And I'm sure no one knows, including Bob Strauss. Why, we don't keep anything from the president. He doesn't always tell us what decisions he has in mind for the future. So I maybe he has a role for Bob Strauss picked up, but I don't think he's told Bob Strauss yet, or us either. What are we going to do with Cuba? Now we're talking about foreign policy. All right. I don't know specifically what we're going to do about Cuba, but I think that there's an interesting relationship going on in foreign policy between Brzezinski and Cy Vance, who work very well together but certainly have differing philosophies. I think Brzezinski is a tougher liner and Cy Vance is more of a negotiator. I think it's very good to have the both of them involved in foreign policy, and they both get their views very well across to the president. There's somebody back here in America. Yeah. I would suggest that, there are two touch places for you. One is your own senator for the federal district court judges. Right now, see, the House and the Senate have different numbers on how many judges there should be. But like in Florida, there are going to be 11 new federal district court judges. 11. In Arizona, I don't know how many there are going to be in Arizona. But there's going to be a new Circuit Court of Appeals judge in Arizona. I know that. But, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, some of them are quadrupling the number of judges that now exist. All right, the two places are your senator to find out how many, in fact, new judges you're getting, when he thinks you're getting them, and what is he going to do about them when the state gets them. The person to call is your senior Democratic senator. If you do not have a Democratic senator, I would suggest you call a Democratic congressman or call any congressman, Republican or Democrat, to find out when the bill is coming through and what the numbers are. Obviously, they will tell you and give you that information. Then what you want to do is, if you have a Democratic senator, is find out what, in fact, he is going to do about federal judgeships or Democratic Congress, whatever your congressional delegation is. What plans do they have about appointments? Are they going to divide them up among them? Are they going to keep them the way they are? Are they going to set up a merit selection panel, which is what the administration has suggested? In terms of Circuit Court of Appeals judges, the information person would be... I would suggest you write to the Justice Department to find out when these panels are going to be reactivated and how you get appointed to them and that sort of thing, if you represent a group. But I would suggest you write to Michael Egan. Yes. Well, is there somebody back here? I'll be glad to talk to anybody after for a little while before I head back. Thank you. The question was about the Shah's visit. I think that there are a lot of people in the world that you deal with that you don't personally like or maybe even approve of their policies, but it's not a reason to stop dealing with them, otherwise we wouldn't have a UN. And I was upset about the Shah visit because I got tear gassed. All my demonstrations outside the White House, which I have 10-year, 15-year history of, including May Day, I never got tear gassed. I was standing literally 10 feet from the president and got tear gassed where the Shah was there. So it was an unusual visit. And I appreciate your coming in view of all the competition. And I hope you follow up on some of those suggestions and really make us responsive to you. We should be.
Thank you very much for most delightful talks. I understand Bunny Mitchell did come.
Oh, Bunny's there.